Blog Talk Radio.
Well, as you have seen a number of times, there is this wild attack against the president from all corners. And I was kind of thinking about this last night. All of the different groups and the individuals that have weighed in and attacked the president over the last, it's hard to believe, over the last couple of months, as he's just been in there a couple of months, and all of the people who have claimed that he was crazy and evil, nuts in some important sense. So the question in my mind was, can they stop this guy? Can they stop Trump? And I mean, Trump could be stopped. Anybody can be stopped. But I don't think, I really don't think the way that they're going at it, they're going to really stop anybody, because there's too many people who've copped onto the game that's going on, and which is just typical leftism, mindless leftism. But there are a couple of interesting local stories. There was a fight between two 19-year-old women over by the university. One girl came over to see her ex-girlfriend and noticed that there were other women at her apartment. And so it started off a barnyard squabble. And the report says that she tried to choke and strangle her ex-girlfriend. So ironically enough, her name is Innocence. But anyway, I thought that was kind of remarkable. I still have to get into that story, the local story about the lawsuit regarding the Tai Chan trial or investigation or prosecution. So if you give me a minute on that. Let me get you some headlines here. Trump set for decision on internet rules. Judge in Hawaii extending order blocking travel ban. Do you agree in this kind of a case, one judge has the ability, one judge living in an island thousands of miles from here, has the ability to shut down a presidential decision for the entire United States? I mean, the way our system is set up in a lot of ways is pretty good. But the founders, especially Jefferson, I think, were worried about a tyranny of any form, including judicial tyranny. So you have to have checks and balances. Correct? But the checks and balances need their own balance. And you can say, well, he can, you know, the Trump can take this to the Supreme Court if they want, which is true. But I think what you've got is a cultural war that's done in the name of law or rules or whatever. And I mean, I think a lot of the people a lot of the people against Trump are broadly opposed to him because he's a proto. The claim is he's a proto Hitler. He's a pseudo Stalin. And I'm sorry, but that's not really good enough. And in addition to that, you know, you can't just attack someone and totally oppose them, in my opinion, in America, just because you disagree with them. I mean, stuff like this never happened to Obama. You know, number one, the media always supported him no matter what. And now the media is attacking, you know, they're attacking Trump. And I've got a little clip here, but you can, I'm sure, just take my word on it. There was a reporter who said, "Is Trump detached from reality?" And I was thinking, when would the media ever go up to the mainstream media ever go up to Obama and say, "Are you detached from reality?" I'm going to try to find this puppy for you. Just so I can, you'll, of course, take my word that it's not, certainly not without the realm of possibilities, but here is, hold on a second. I got it for you. Let me first go back to your headlines though. Facebook of hate trolls share memes or stories or images about slavery, rape, and abortion, which is undoubtedly against the right. Jeff Bezos, owner of Amazon, now world's second richest person. What a business model, you know. John Podesta, formerly the head of Hillary's stuff, slapping a cease and desist letter on Daily Caller, the website. But here's what has happened. They found out that Podesta bought something like 75,000 shares of a company that is out of Moscow. So, unfazed by Trump, bunch of gringos chase Mexican dream. That's funny. I'll give you a little bit more on that later. Study, dramatic increase in older women boozing hard. Now, I was thinking about this. What would cause that? You know what I think it is that there is the generation of women who went through feminism and went through the sexual revolution and feminism and became equal with their husbands in terms of power. And, you know, and then the divorce rate goes through the roof and all these different problems. I think this is just my impression, is that those women, I haven't really looked into this particular study, but if I had to guess, it would have something to do with the loneliness associated with the kind of collapse of the family in response to this. Now, do you think it was worth losing the family as the societal model, the nuclear family, one dad, one mom, the maker and the breeder and educator of their own children, divorce being in the minority, women more at home than in the workplace? Do you think the transition into feminism, the modern world, you know, equal rights, women having careers just the same as men, and women fighting for control of the family or the household in ways that probably previous generations would have been somewhat incomprehensive. Do you think that was worth it? Where we are now, was it worth the transition? And so I think there are a lot of lonely people out there. And I think when you're getting older, you don't have anybody that's, you know, really, the family is apart. And, you know, people are just not sentimental about marriage anymore. They're really not. Marriage is a vehicle to meet your needs. And when it stops meeting your needs, you can immediately jump out of the plane and pull the ripcord. In the meantime, the kids are on their own. This, the way society is set up now with preschool and then public school, and by the time kids get done with public school, they're old enough to be on their own, even though economically, maybe these days, that's more of a pipe dream. But in addition, you've got the social welfare state that is set up to intervene into people's lives and make sure that kids, you know, are, you know, have school lunches, that they have, you know, that you have TANF and welfare and food stamps and Section 8, all these things that are meant to interject social, or pardon me, economic support into the family. Have those things backfired? I mean, do we have a worse society after all this stuff? I mean, you can't turn back the clock, but I'm just wondering. 523-1450. I think I have the text machine out in the car, but all right. North Carolina lawmakers reaching deal to repeal trans bathroom law. So just because Trump came in doesn't mean we don't have all these crazy things to deal with. Male birth control coming. Terror risk from small domestic drones. Officials are worried. Cloud rains tequila. Maybe it's over those women, those older women that are drinking off their heads. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly Connor Show is this.
Good morning, Kelly. This is your good friend. You're my best man, Bob.
All right, Bob, what's going on?
Well, I was on the National Talk Radio last night, and I got a real good charge, but I didn't get a good night's sleep. And what I'd like to speak about is what's going on at the detention center. And I think we may have talked about it before, but
Bob,
I think it's worth bringing up again.
Bob, I have begged you to take a breath between paragraphs. Can we make a deal on that?
I love you, Kelly. This is how I get when I'm going to get married.
So, Bob, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I've got to find out, what show were you on? Hopefully not America's.
Robert Davi.
Hopefully not
Bill,
America's Most Wanted. It's who?
Rutenberg was on there, and we spoke for a little while. He's a great guy. He's in California.
I don't even know.
Was in New York.
I'm sorry. Bob, for God's sakes, don't let me interrupt you. Please go on with your what do they call it, a soliloquy in Shakespeare? Go ahead.
Yes, sir. You humble me, sir.
That'll be the day. Go ahead.
I'm going to give you some money. So
I'm here. I'm waiting.
I've got a friend in El Paso by the name of John, and he's going to be the best man, but you're going to be right next to him. I'm not really quite sure. I've never done this before, Kelly. But getting back to the detention center, I understand that the recent director had some issues, or he got replaced or something like that. But while I was there, I got so sick and tired of those guards coming in. Some of them would say it. Chow! I thought, I felt like a dog in there. And if I become a county commissioner, like I announced last night, I am going to change that, because I went to the Las Vegas Medical Center, and they said, breakfast, lunch, dinner, come on, everybody, let's go eat. That was not stressful. The detention center is stressful because of the poor language they use down there, and you can tell Frankie and any of your other friends, well, tell them they're invited. That's what I'm concerned about.
Wait a second.
I may have to write a letter to the
editor.
Wait
a second.
Have you ever done an op-ed before?
Bob, yeah, no, I've never. They got rid of the sound off, though. When they shrunk the paper from 30 pages down to 2, I think they got rid of sound off.
No, they didn't.
Didn't they? I think they did, yeah.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah. The paper has been reduced to the size of a postage stamp.
Yeah, you got to buy one of those yellow boxes in order for them to deliver your paper.
Well, that's another issue. Anyway, so Bob, let's boil this down to the top three subjects we're discussing today.
Ben, is he going to be in today?
Yes.
Okay, that's all we need to talk about.
All right, thanks for the call. Have a great day.
Yes,
bye-bye.
Sir.
Bye. Never heard of that talk show host. What was his name? Wooten? Okay. Ex-punk rocker Democrat to challenge Cruz in Senate race. You never know. Gun falls out of inmate's blank during jail surge. Well, out of his butt. I wonder if he knew it was in there. Did he have a gun in his rump, or was he just happy to see his cellmate? Here we go. Spring break China. Z ready for Mar-a-Lago trip. He's probably excited. You know what? Have you ever seen pictures of Camp David, this retreat that is near D.C. that all the presidents went to? And now Trump doesn't waste his time at Camp David, which looks like a really boring place, to be honest. He flies down to Mar-a-Lago, and so they're counting hours that Trump is not in the White House. So, because you know, obviously that's the most important thing you can do with your time. Blaze host Tommy Lahren, superstar, but abortion advocate, has been fired from the Blaze, but she's falling upwards. She's not falling down. She is a very attractive, a very clever, and very fast on her feet, and she's going to end up. Oh, I wonder if she'll end up on some hideous place like CNN or MSNBC. Man-eating shark on road in Australia after cyclone sucks it out of the water. Record snowfall buries Anchorage. I should call my brother about that. House approves bill to force public release of EPA so-called science. Tough times at ESPN. Viewership erosion. All right, I go to ESPN. And I go on there, and I open it up. The first thing I see is world soccer results. I'm sorry, I don't care. And I would say most Americans don't care. But they're trying to make a statement. And then Bruce Jenner gets voted Athlete of the Year. I mean, what did he do, the Tranny Olympics or something? Like decades after he won the whatever that's called, the decathlon. But people can't stand, I can't stand this idea that I'm living in this world where I have to, you know, you have to, like, you're given a menu. Here's the subjects that you can talk about. Here's the adjectives you can use. So how are the politically correct people any better than the group that they replaced? How are politically correct people any better than a Christian missionary who lives next door, who's always looking over the fence and trying to give you free advice and everything? And to me, I mean, they're a lot worse, because there's no, you know, in leftism, there is no Ten Commandments. There's no set of rules in which you cannot transcend or break. So, all right, anyway, I had to reboot my computer a couple of times while we were talking. But anyway, take a little break here. 622 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruz. Thanks for the call, Bob. Very nice. Very nice. All right. So, you got a few headlines under your belt now. All right. So here is the, I want to play some for you that I think that you will get a little kick out of. And we do have Ben coming on. So the favorite moment of many people of the show during the week. Now that Walter Rubel no longer graces the studio here. As you recall, he left in a huff. And I never heard from him again. Although Kathy, God bless her, I guess Kathy and Frankie can no longer bear the idea of calling in and eating crow. I mean, we all ate crow for 8 years with Obama, and it's you know, we lived through that. All right, so I've got a segment here I'm calling Spice Girl or Ryan's Hope, and the quote of the day: I don't have an agenda. Check this out. Here's the thing that I find touching and kind of comical, and to say the least, it's a comical maneuver to take. I don't have an agenda. I just tell the truth. Who in their right mind gets up and says, I don't have an agenda? Who gets up and, well, let me put it to you this way. It may be true there are people that don't have agendas that know it out there, but the idea that there's a group of people working in the media that don't have an agenda, that are just there to tell the truth. I had gotten some analysis out of a very famous book called After Virtue by Alistair McIntyre. It was he made a huge splash when it was published. I think it was published around 1980. And what McIntyre gets into is this idea, this cult of what he calls basically the cult of facts, explanation, and expertise, is one of the specific, I don't know, not really a highlight, but a specific characteristic of our society, that there are groups of people who have somehow kind of established themselves in the society as an expert, as a person of excellence and training. And this is, according to him, it's out of the Enlightenment. We have this idea that the kind of the scientists and the experts take the place of priests, and they stand up and argue and explain things in the society. And so what McIntyre, I just want to put this out there, what McIntyre is saying is that there's no such thing as a fact that just pops up out of the ground and somebody says there's a fact and I don't have an agenda, but go look at this fact. All of these facts are put together by people, and they're part of a view, of an opinion. I mean, and what I find in like this guy, Ted Koppel, just tell the facts, do some real journalism for once. That's what he's telling people. I mean, if Ted Koppel's life is any indication, his career, he doesn't even know what he's talking about. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody has an angle. And that's what I was saying, this idea of POV journalism, point of view journalism. Tell people what your biases are and then let them account for it. But here we go. Here is for you here from April Ryan. All right, check this out.
I'm talking about Russia.
If the president puts Russian staff.
This is April Ryan became one of the Spice Girls because Sean Spicer went after her because she was
is tired.
Wrong place, wrong time, number one. But number two, she did what all of these journalists think that they're doing. I'm going to show up and I'm going to criticize you. And I'm not biased. I don't have an agenda. I'm here for the truth. And if you can't handle what I say, my comments, my questions, you're not interested in the truth. This is an insane way to look at the world, and it's why liberalism is coming apart at the seams.
I'm talking about Russia.
If the president puts Russian salad dressing on his salad tonight, somehow that's a Russian connection.
Our team of correspondents and analysts are standing by, but let's start with April Ryan, who was just in that White House press briefing. April, you had a pretty testy exchange there with Sean Spicer. I want to replay it now and get your reaction to it in just a moment.
I've said it from the day that I got here until whatever, that there is no connection. You've got Russia. If the president puts Russian salad dressing on his salad tonight, somehow that's a Russian connection. But every single person, I appreciate your agenda here. But the reality is, hold on. No, at some point, report the facts. The facts are that every single person who has been briefed on this subject has come away with the same conclusion. Republican, Democrat, so I'm sorry that that disgusts you. You're shaking your head. I appreciate it, but understand this, that at some point the facts are what they are. And every single person who has been briefed on the situation with respect to the situation with Russia, Republican, Democrat, Obama appointee, career, have all come to the same conclusion. At some point, April, you're going to have to take no for an answer with respect to whether or not there was collusion.
So April, you've got an agenda. You're shaking your head. From what I can tell, you were just trying to get the reaction.
If you're a leftist, you have an agenda. It's like these people have never taken one serious look inside themselves.
A very point blank reaction. There's committee hearings on the Hill claiming that your campaign could have had ties to Russia, the Trump campaign. How do you? A perception problem. That's the question you were trying to ask, right?
Yeah, 2.5 months in, there's a lot swirling about this administration. 2.5 months in, I've been here for 20 years. Since 1997, the second term of Bill Clinton, we've never seen anything like this before. And my question was simple. How do you change the perception problem, basically? I don't know verbatim what I said, but that was the impetus and the crux of my question. And it went off into this Russian dressing, no shaking my head or whatever. But the issue is the issue. What's happening around here? We cover everything presidential. And you cannot ignore, as a reporter, that there are issues on Capitol Hill. You have investigations going. You have the head of the Intel Committee coming here to the White House, briefing people, and the president himself, and there is questions of the fact that this man should step down or you know, improprieties, all other things, and obstruction of justice and other issues related to.
Well, this young lady is, she's African-American, so of course this is a racist attack. My computer's stuck again, but
these are real issues that a reporter will ask a White House, be it 2.5 months in, be it the first day.
You know what these people remind me of? It would be like cannibals going down to the police department to report a murder.
So I understand. I understand what Sean is doing. Sean is being the White House correspondent. White House press secretary. Sean is being the White House press secretary.
All right. So this is kind of stuck. So take a break here. But I mean, this is sad. It's sad that these people have been really completely smoked out for what they're doing, and they act like we've all seen, you know, you see a cat that's, you know, walking around, and then it sees you moving, it stops, it freezes. It could be a black cat in the middle of a snowbank, but the cat thinks that you can't see it because it's not moving. That's the feeling that I get from these people. They're so lacking in self-awareness, and the problem is external. You know, the problem is not that the media is biased or that they have an agenda or that they're so liberal that the only facts that exist in the world are liberal. It's the problem is with Trump, or it's with whoever is working for him. And we've got to be aware of the fact that there's either a Russian connection or the perception of a Russian connection. As far as I can tell, the only perception of that, the only opinion of that, is in the media itself. So anyway, 6:36, I got a couple more clips on this that are pretty hilarious. One involves a barnyard squabble. 6:36, we'll be right back. Thank you. So you heard this young lady's her statements. Now here's some analysis of this. Like I say, she's African American, and therefore this is a racist event. Although she's not claiming it's racist, but other social justice warriors are. And for some reason, maybe it's the internet in town, because I've had some problems at my office too, but it seems like things are slow. But Mexico invents cloud, which rains tequila in bid to attract holiday makers in sun-drenched country. Talk about bizarre, huh? So that's from the Daily Mirror. If you're interested in that, Mexico Tourist Board has invented a cloud which rains tequila in a bid to pull in crowds of tourists from Europe. The tequila-loving nation has roped in the help of American marketing company to create the cloud, and now hoping that tourists flock to the country. The alcohol-emitting cloud is programmed to dispense tequila when it is raining outside in a bid to tempt Germans, especially, to the country. And it's created by a high-tech system using ultrasonic humidifiers, which vibrate tequila at a frequency that transforms it into a visible. The mist then goes into a plastic container where it mixes with vapor to form a cloud, which periodically produces alcoholic rain. Visitors may collect tequila from beneath the cloud, or they can just stand there weeping in appreciation. And Germany is the second largest tequila importer behind the USA. Pretty clever, huh? All right, let's see. Oh, this dang clip on April. But so anyway, they interviewed her, and she, this idea, though, that this is, nobody's ever gone through anything like this before, right? We've never had a presidency like this. Of course, because, you know, Trump is uniquely evil. So what do you think that Glenn Beck should have kept this lady, Tommy Lahren? And she is, you know, she's natural blonde. She's thin, beautiful smile, great eyes, all this, you know, very telegenic. Should he have kept her on his network? I mean, what does his network stand for anyway? I mean, it's just, he's gone back to the middle of the road. Why not keep her on TV and just say, I allow freedom of opinion on my show? I'm totally opposed to abortion. She is for it. I think it's terrible, but you know, there's some people that'll agree with her, and she's mostly conservative. Now, Glenn Beck is telling her she doesn't know libertarianism. I would argue to Glenn Beck, you don't know what libertarianism is, because libertarianism wants to get rid of as many rules as possible. And a rule against abortion would not be necessarily libertarian. One reason I'm not libertarian, but all right. So a stolen gun falls from inmate's anus. It's not clear whether the owner wants it back, but Limestone County authorities in Alabama recovered a stolen gun when it fell from an inmate's body cavity during a search. Jesse O'Neill Roberts, 23, of Elk Mount, was being booked into the Limestone County Jail on a misdemeanor charge of public intoxication when the weapon fell from his body. And the jailer said, I immediately considered that he defecated on himself before noticing a familiar shape in the form of a pistol in his boxers. And so he was, Roberts was released after midnight, no, arrested after midnight, after a call about a prowler on a local street. So they said he was arrested for public intoxication, and it was a 380 caliber, which you can fit in a front pocket, to be honest. They're pretty small, but all right, let me this dang clip. All right, so let's take a break for weather. I'll be right back on that. Local weather. 523-1450 AM Las Cruces. It is 6:45. on KOBE. Call in if you have a topic. All right, so let's see if I can get this thing here. Anyway, hope you're having a good day. Yeah, so there is a problem in the Tai Chan trial or retrial, and the lady that was the head investigator claims that they cut off funding for access to, resources, let's just put it that way, and this is a trial that already had a lot of problems that was ended up, they had to redo it. So they didn't get the conviction, and it's a total disaster. And I'm sure that it's a pain in the butt for the DA. And the DA, Mark D'Antonio, says he was outraged to find out about a lawsuit against the city of Las Cruces that could hinder the Tai Chan trial. So, all right, so I'm not going to get this clip here, but I've got another one that is dealing with the same problem, which is the approach is that we have a fact, and the fact is a problem that Trump is connected to Russia and he is mentally unhinged. And so, I mean, how do these people expect to be, treated respectfully when they're so biased and they act like they're like the cat that stops moving that thinks nobody sees them? They're so biased, and how are they can't. I don't think they can win the game. But we have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hi, good morning, Kelly. It's Marty.
Marty, how you been?
I've been good, sir.
Good, good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I want to point out something. I was raised out in California for the first, 20-something years of my life. And I noticed a distinct pattern among my friends that I grew up with out in California that moved away like I did, because I've been gone for the last half of my lifetime. Lived in Oklahoma, Texas, Nebraska, so on and so forth, and now I'm here in New Mexico. We became conservative. I don't know if it's a travel or being exposed to different cultures of Americans. My friends who remain, specifically in the Bay Area or Southern California, centered around Los Angeles, went farther and farther left. And there's just such a distinct pattern of it. But my friends who moved to rural California, like into the mountains of Sierra Nevada, and became more self-sufficient, they became conservative. So there was a real pattern to it. And so what I'm thinking is that people who tend to be liberal are liberal because they're dependent upon city, state, and federal governments to sustain them. You follow me?
I do follow you, but I think there's something deeper here. I think it is human nature to want to believe what the people believe around you. And I mean, number one, we're saturated, but TV is default liberalism, you know? And so
that's another thing is my friends that gave up TV like me, I haven't owned a TV telly in 20 years.
Yeah. And I mean, I haven't watched TV I just don't watch TV because I found that, I mean, not that I don't waste time, but I found that TV was a waste of time. And it was I guess you'd say an unacceptable waste of time because so much on TV was kind of insulting to the intellect, you know, and it didn't have any content to it. But what I'm thinking is, okay, you've got this group of people that have been in power through media for decades, and the tables turned on them, and they don't even know it. They don't even know it's like somebody who has a psychiatric condition who's not aware that they're naked. You know, sometimes people flip out and they tear their clothes off and they run around screaming, or they're walking down the road like everything's fine. That's what these people are like. And I don't think you can insult or, they believe if they keep a unified front that they will destroy Trump. And what I think is really happening is they're destroying what's left of their credibility. Marty,
yeah, I follow you.
Marty, I've got a couple of ads to play. So you want to kind of wrap this puppy up? Because I unfortunately have to.
I do. There's another pattern of my friends who stayed in California along the coastal line. It's not in the interior California. Interior California is very conservative. A lot of people don't know that. That's why a lot of conservative Californians want to break away. They want desperately to break away because they have no representation. But the last thing I want to note is the pattern is that my liberal friends do not have God, a higher power, if you will.
Yeah, that's it. That's
in their life.
That's a lot of it. I think that's a lot of it. I got to let you go, but that's a great point. Thank you. Very good point. All right, folks. I mean, you know, when I started this show, it's a secular show. It's, commercial radio and everything. But it's always in the back of my mind on one thing that I wanted to make different about this show was to have this show be at some level reflective of what people, how people think and what they talk about. And, there's this huge swath of people in America that are totally silenced because they're religious. And what I really wanted was to try to get rid of as much, censorship as possible. And if you're Muslim and you want to call up, talk, I mean, I think people who've listened to the show realize that anybody who has an opinion has anybody can come in and talk. I may not agree with your religion, but I think it's important to have a venue where you can talk about what you think about, unless it's certain things that the average person wouldn't say in front of their friends or family or mother. But we'll take a break here and be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. So anyway, just kind of getting onto that thing, there is a way of seeing America, there's a way of seeing life that is totally disconnected from how the liberal media presents it. And I think it's important to hang on to that and to, you know, so this, I guess, show in my mind is a way to kind of cover that. Here is Tommy Lahren, who just got fired. She is unbelievable, folks. Really something special.
Your labels don't work anymore. You've overused them, and now they're meaningless. Bernie's basement dwellers, tight-wearing justice warriors, bimbo eruptions, unicorn promises, her bottom feeder existence, illegal alien line cutters, you might be a snowflake. Obama phones, sneaky, conniving, power-hungry, condescending, lying sack of crap, your crooked butt, Hillary cuddling, is leftist, crying, bigot, racist, sexist, and homophobe, you might be a snowflake. The Democrats, the bleeding hearts, the self-righteous kneelers, are sucky losers. If this sack of wasted skin, let the wiener leak. Proud, tall, and gracious. You might be a snowflake. You might be a snowflake. You are for damn sure a snowflake. Sometimes it just sucks to suck. You might be a snowflake. I hear there are some snowflakes, stage actors and tights and rap stars and blowhards on The View, her dog, Snapchat profile photos, but please go ahead and drop your labels again.
What? There she is in all of her glory. We'll be back after break on the air. We're going to have some Ben Rossin, some prime rib. Ben Rossin, we'll be right back. K706, good morning. It's the 30th day of the third month, and we're delighted to have another episode of the Ben Rossin Report. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Kelly.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Looks like we're about running out of March, though, aren't we?
One more day to March, and so get your hiking shoes on. But what's going on? And so how do you feel about spring getting here? How's it affecting Rossin's Builder Supply?
Well, you know, Kelly, I enjoy having spring here, but although this morning it feels a little more chilly than it does springish, the weather certainly is changing on us. Hopefully we'll get away from some of that wind, but if you've got any damaged screens or windows that are leaking or anything like that, come in and see us at Rossin Builder Supply.
Sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
All right, so how's the County Commission?
Pretty well, Kelly. We had a work session on Wednesday yesterday. We had a work session. Among other things, we talked about sewer rates in the county or wastewater rates. And one of the things that we did a study on and we've discovered is that the Kelly, I'm struggling for words here this morning. But the wastewater is being subsidized by the general fund by just over $1 million. So we've got five communities that have wastewater service that's provided by the county, and those five communities are getting that wastewater at a discounted rate and having the rest of the county pay to support that.
Sounds delicious. What's wastewater?
Well, I know it's not real attractive. We also spent a lot of that work session talking about health insurance. You put those two items together, it was an exciting work session, as you can imagine. But so one of the things that we gave direction to staff to do was to look at raising those rates out in the county to put less of a drain on the general fund and be able to use that money for more improvement type deals. So that was a long, rather dry discussion, but just another aspect of what we deal with on the county commission. So that was a decision that was made. In other news, Kelly, we're looking for some planning and zoning commissioners. We've got three new appointments that we'll be making next month. So if any listeners are interested in serving on the planning and zoning commission, they usually meet twice a month on Thursdays. Be great to get their application in. You can get more information on that from my Facebook page, Benjamin Rossin, Doñana County District 3. You can also go to the county's website, doñanacounty.org, and get information on that as well.
All right, let me ask you something that's been on my mind since we talked about it the last time, the sanctuary city status. Yeah. And Jeff Sessions getting up saying that there is going to be payback. There's going to be a cost to being a sanctuary city. Although I have gone over it just the other day, I would like you to ask you again, because you're so well informed. If I ever ask you a question, you almost always know it instantly, or you'll say, I'll get right back to you. So what is our status in the city? What is it in the county? What is it in the state? What can you inform us? And in your mind, after you point, you know, kind of fill us in, what situation are we in terms of danger for funding?
Well, you know, Kelly, speaking from this county standpoint, I think there are three things that the county has done that qualify us as a sanctuary community. And I'll tell you, it really depends on what report you see. So I've seen several reports that list us as a sanctuary county. I've seen other ones that don't list us. And so the big question there is, what is it in President Trump's mind or his administration that they're going to use as a qualifier for sanctuary status? And that is not defined. But there are three things that I think we've done that lead to that. The first is a safe communities ordinance that we passed in 2014,
yeah.
I believe.
And I think I read some of the details from that.
Yeah, and that basically tells county staff, including the sheriff's deputies, that they cannot ask for someone's immigration status. So I think that's one thing. Number two is immigration holds at the detention center, ICE, Immigration and Custom Enforcement. If someone is in the detention center and is set to be released, Immigration and Customs Enforcement can send an ICE hold to the detention center. And that basically says, hey, please hold this individual for 24 hours. We'll be by to pick them up. The county does not honor those ICE holds, so we do not cooperate with the federal government on that level.
Are you worried about this? Are you worried about the fact that we're kind of at this point sticking out like a sore thumb?
You know, Kelly, I am. There was an article that just came out in the Sun News, I want to say 2 or 3 days ago, that talked about New Mexico's dependence on federal funding among top in the nation is the headline.
Yeah.
And on that report,
I think I read that.
Yeah, we're listed as the number three state in the nation. And again, different reports show different things, but we're always in the top five in the nation. So here we are, extremely dependent on federal funding. And, you know, one of the things that that also came out, I think, in yesterday's paper is about opioid abuse in Doñana County. We're number three in all the counties in New Mexico out of 33 counties. We're the third highest on opioid deaths in New Mexico. We're getting federal funding to help educate and inform and be able to fight that situation. We've got just over $3 million we received in January to deal with mental health issues in our community. Kelly, I think we've got $9 million for Soledad Canyon and Dripping Springs to repave those roads. We get federal funding every single month for one thing or another. And so the question that the commission has to deal with at some point is, are we willing to jeopardize losing tens of millions of dollars to make a stance on illegal immigration?
And I mean, as one of the leaders of the community and maybe the only real conservative out there, what's your message to the other folks? I mean, the other people that have an impact on this.
You know, I think it's something we have to take a hard, serious look at and stop just pretending that there's only one side to this coin. Because I think that's what we've done a lot of times, Kelly, is we've just said, look, we want to stand up for those disenfranchised or whatever other word you want to use for them. And so we're going to stand up and protect them. But we have to recognize that if we continue to do that, we will be protecting them instead of working on opioid deaths or mental health issues or road projects in our community. And the question is, what's more important? And I think taking care of our citizens is more important, Kelly.
And there's another issue here. I mean, the people who they're giving sanctuary to, number one, are breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that's never really brought up by the opposition, number one. And number two is, by definition, common sense tells you that people that have a criminal history are legal are by definition going to be drawn to sanctuary areas.
Absolutely. And Kelly, it is not just illegal immigrants that will be drawn, but it will also draw those people who prey on them. And, you know, that's...
Could you develop that a little bit, that idea?
Sure. So you have studies have shown that someone who's not in the country legally is less likely to contact the police or law enforcement if there's something that's going wrong. We see that a lot family members, domestic abuse type situations. So what we will end up with is attracting those individuals that prey and take advantage of those people that aren't here legally.
So it's really anti-humanitarian to support these
and
things too.
It really doesn't protect them.
It doesn't protect them. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Ralph Kelly.
Good morning, Ralph. I hope you're well. And what's on your mind?
Yes. This sanctuary situation, president could affect a lot other items in state other than just these cities.
Such
if
as?
He took half of the project out of White Sands and relocated them. Can you imagine what it'd do to the county and to the city? The same with Holloman. They just relocated a very sophisticated wind over there. Albuquerque, Kirtland, and Sandia. Look what's happened to Cannon. Look what happened to Roswell.
Yeah.
Roswell is a dead place since they took the 509th and the 6th bomb wing out of there.
It's another, in my mind, it's another one of these examples of a lack of leadership, you know, like getting up and saying we're not a growth, we're a no-grow zone. So we're going to become a sanctuary area, and we're just going to hope and pray that the government doesn't, you know, come after us.
Well, that's a bad train of thought, because he most certainly can do that. He doesn't even have to fool the city, the funding and all that he's at the government house, just closing White Sands. Can you imagine? Just half of White Sands. Just closing, relocating half of the projects in White Sands.
Yeah.
And taking half of that wing out of the Holloman.
I was thinking about that, and I think I read that out of 800,000 employees in the state, 200,000 are government workers. I mean,
yeah.
How many workers, government workers, would we have to lose? Bearing in mind that there's some very high-paying government jobs right around here. Well, let's just say that they relocated White Sands over by, as unlikely as this may be, relocated White Sands over to, I don't know, Alabama or whatever. You're right. This place would be in free fall.
White Sands could very, very easily be located to California between Boston and Lancaster. I worked out of Edwards Air Force Base for many years. That would be ideal for the work that White Sands is doing. It has all the security on account of Edwards and all that. I mean, it's very feasible to do things like that. And people don't realize that by the more they aggravate the president, the worse it's going to get for the state of New Mexico. But if they're willing to go that route, I guess we'll go right back to 1800s.
Well, and I mean, in theory, you could oppose any law. You could declare this an area where you can shoot up heroin or beat your wife. I mean, these are, you know what I'm saying? It just seems like it's more bad decision-making by the leadership.
Well, and Ralph, I think you make a great point about the other government jobs that we have in this area. And that's one of the things that Sun News article talked about, is why we're number three in the nation because of those jobs, among with other things that we have here. But you're absolutely right. It has an enormous impact. And also, I can't tell you how many people have found out about Las Cruces because they came or were stationed at White Sands for a period of time and then decided to retire here afterwards. It has a big impact on our economy.
Before White Sands opened, there was a sign there by the Rio Grande Bridge that said entering Las Cruces where 10,000 Las Cruces welcome you. Now, White Sands is what's built Las Cruces. What else is there here other than the state, New Mexico State College, and what else? That's it.
We have a lot of ag, too.
Absolutely.
Yes, but, you know, they're paying the farmers not to grow cotton, not to grow lettuce, not to grow a lot of produce so they can buy them from Mexico. That's a fact. I have some relatives who had large numbers of acres of land. Agricultural.
Sounds like a great business to be in, not be getting paid to not grow. Thanks for the call, Ralph. Have a good day. All right, folks, got to take a break here. Anything else?
Kelly, thanks for having me on, and I'll see you next Thursday.
Great to see you. Thanks for sponsoring the show. And, folks, let's take a little break and come back. I've got a little bit on sanctuary cities. 523-1450 to call in at 719. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE. All right, so, man, there's a lot of great clips here. I didn't plan to talk about sanctuary cities, but here's a little bit from Sheriff Clark from Wisconsin. Sanctuary cities are a haven for criminal activity. Think about this. Don't think about this in terms of, for a minute, the poor illegal who's here, who's been a hardworking person who is adding to America, that just their only law they've ever broken in their life is to cross the border without paperwork. Don't think about it from that angle for just a minute, although that's always the way it's presented. Think about it in terms of the consequences of sanctuary cities. Here's Sheriff Clark on that.
Best-selling book, Cop Under Fire, Moving Beyond Hashtags of Race, Crime, and Politics for a Better America. Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. Sheriff, I got to imagine as part of your daily job, you have to deal with people that suffer like these parents, and probably there have been those moments you have to tell them, oh, sorry, your son and daughter is dead. Sorry, they're not alive. What happened? They got killed. And then in the case of it's an illegal immigrant, then you say, why does our government not protect the American people?
Sean, it rips my heart out to listen to those angel moms, and may God comfort them in their time of grief. Look, this stuff is avoidable. That's stuff that angers me. We're talking about some failed policies, these sanctuary cities. We're not asking much. When I say we, I'm talking about ICE officials. We're talking about this anti-detainer policy that many of these sanctuary cities adhere to, where they will not hang on to individuals until ICE can get the paperwork together and the case together to schedule them for deportation. That's not asking a lot just to hang on to them. These things are avoidable. I heard about that rape case, that young 14-year-old girl, these subhuman creeps. And the thing that really angered me is one of those guys was out awaiting a deportation hearing. That's why I said these anti-detainer policies. We don't need to change the law. We're not asking local officials, ICE anyway, is not asking local officials to enforce immigration. They're just asking them to honor a detainer, a lawful piece of paper that says, hold on to this individual until we can get the deportation schedule. These things are killing communities. They're killing cities. It is a...
You know, one of the things that comes to mind when I started to think about this is how weak America has become versus where we used to be. I mean, 20 or 30 years ago, the idea that, you know, the authorities would find somebody who had done something illegal and then just release them out of a public policy based on the idea that they owed it to the person, this group of people, would have been laughed. It would have been hysterical, you know? And I know that we've had issues with crossing the border for 100 years, but those are not necessarily the same two ideas. The people that have come across the border for years and, you know, for a century have or more, and the fact that this used to be their land is another debate. But, I mean, it's American territory now. But those people who crossed the border did help to build up America. But you don't have to do it illegally, right? I mean, that's part of the point. Nobody puts a gun to these people's head, I guess, unless they're living in Let me turn that around a little bit. Maybe somebody did put a gun to these people's heads and they felt like they had to relocate. But it's always on us to help these people. It's always the duty is put on us. To you, you're a land of liberty and charity, and these poor people need your help. Why can't it be turned around? Fix your own country. Deal with the cartels. Make Honduras not the world's most violent place, the murder capital of the globe. Why is it always on us? I mean, why is there no emphasis put on these countries to fix themselves? Because undoubtedly a lot of these people would prefer to stay where they grew up and where they know have friends and family and everything, and they understand the culture. All right, here's a little bit from Gutfeld. Sanctuary cities cloak evil consequences.
There's always something heroic and romantic about taking a stand against the powers that be. Take Denver Mayor Michael Hancock, who embraced the title Sanctuary City, despite President Trump's threats to cut off his federal funding. Hancock is the type of mayor who would be portrayed saintly in movies or TV series, likely played by Martin Sheen. In such fictions, consequences are ignored, even as they're played out tragically in real life. On February 7th, illegal immigrant Ever Vallis robbed and murdered Timothy Cruz at a train station. 19-year-old Vallis was freed from the county jail despite ICE agents pleading that he be kept behind bars while he awaits deportation because of his gang ties. Immigration agents asked to be told when he'd be released. The cops did so, but apparently only 30 minutes before letting him go. So off he went, free in a sanctuary city, and that may have cost the 32-year-old man his life. It's the great deception in modern culture. Bad things call for noble names to cloak their evil outcomes. Sanctuary City, a heartwarming title that sounds like an oasis for the innocent, except for an innocent man waiting for a train. The Denver mayor once said,
"If being a sanctuary city means that we value taking care of one another and welcoming refugees and immigrants, then I welcome the title."
All right, here's one more clip on this thing. This is from Rebel Media from about a month ago.
In response to mass, uncontrolled, illegal migration, many misguided leftist politicians have created a policy to shield the illegal immigrants from federal immigration laws and authorities. I'm talking about sanctuary cities. They can be found all over North America, including in major U.S. cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Denver, Tucson, Arizona, Chicago, Minneapolis, New York, Boston, Philadelphia. I could go on. And some states, including California and Connecticut, have enacted sanctuary legislation. Now, things may be changing under President Donald Trump. In cracking down on the rampant illegal immigration in the United States, Trump has vowed to shut down sanctuary cities by cutting off federal funding. He says that sanctuary cities are a failed policy and that they lead to increased crime. Well, in Canada, liberal politicians are taking the country in the opposite direction. Last week, Montreal City Council, led by Mayor and former Liberal Immigration Minister Denis Coderre, declared itself a sanctuary city for illegal immigrants. In Canada, cities like Toronto, Vancouver, Hamilton, and London, Ontario have all passed similar motions, and city councils in Ottawa, Winnipeg, Saskatoon, and Regina are all considering doing the same. These city councils have banded together to create sanctuary cities without doing any public consultations or getting input from residents. So what exactly are sanctuary cities? Well, there's no universal definition of a sanctuary city, and every jurisdiction has different sanctuary rules and policies. Typically, a sanctuary city does not verify a person's immigration status before that person is eligible to receive taxpayer-funded municipal services, be it a library card, subsidized housing, or even employment with the local government. Regardless of status, sanctuary cities provide all individuals with the same privileges as legal tax-paying residents and citizens. Some sanctuary cities go even further and actively refuse to cooperate with federal immigration authorities, and they undermine deportation efforts. Sanctuary cities are an American invention. They're a band-aid solution to cope with a broken immigration system, a porous southern border, and somewhere between 12 and 30 million illegal residents.
All right, let me ask you just one thing here, because I think it is an indictment of the time that we're living in. This is what I propose to you. The time that we're living in right now is a time of almost unbridled propaganda, in which children are raised in schools that don't focus on things like history or logic, reading comprehension beyond just the basics. And that's not an indictment of teachers. It's an indictment of the system that we've come up with. And these people are sitting ducks, and we've got these millennials that are, you know, you got the snowflakes out there and millennials who are easily swayed. And so what you have out there, and here's what I disagree with, and this is why I think that we need education system that is informed by history and also by such things as religious doctrines, that there is such a thing as evil, that there is no such thing as a story with only one side, that there's no such thing as sacrifices without consequences, or, you know, and the thing that I disagree with liberals is they portray a world in which if you jump onto the liberal train, everything's going to work out for you. All your ideas are going to be successful. You're going to have fame, or not fame, but success. And, you know, it's just so irresponsible to put these ideas out there. And so it is created, not fame, but success. You're going to be successful if you buy into liberal ideas. The problem with this is that you are, and you heard it from these kids that were screaming at the university, at Yale University, screaming at their teachers that we have a right not to be offended. And they're standing there sobbing because someone wants to put on a Halloween costume that is based on Pocahontas. The upshot is that you're producing a generation of intellectual cripples, of social misfits who are not going to be able to make it in the world. And America used to be the opposite of that. You know, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me, was something that all kids learned. And if you wanted to be a success, you had to be willing to deal with opposition and hardship and sacrifice. And that, you know, and the idea that you could have a belief system that had no downside, I think that's probably the most evil thing that these people have put out there. We'll take a break. 7:35, Kelly O'Connell, local news. We're going to come back and talk about Tai Chan a little bit. This song is called In Memory of Elizabeth Reed. It was a tombstone that one of the members of the band, the Allman Brothers, saw. And they, it was a young girl that had died probably in the 1800s that they based the song on. 7:35 a.m. Las Cruces, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. We will be back. All right, so we've got this story about with Ty Chan, and as you recall, this trial, this case went to trial, and there was a problem, so they're going to have to redo it. There is an incredible fact that has come out in this thing that I just realized. The lawsuit is filed by Irma Palos. She's self-described as the lead investigative detective on the Ty Chan murder, and she claims that she was not given support in this case. This is one of the most explosive and shocking crimes that has ever been committed in this city, with one police officer getting into a drunken brawl with another one and ended up shooting him and killing him. And so she claims that she was not given an assistant forensic investigator for the evidence in the case. And the most incredible thing about this, I can't get my head around this, that she filed the lawsuit in October, but they just found out about it, according to Chan's lawyers and the DA's office down here. It's incredible. How do you not know about this lawsuit? Now, I mean, you know, October, November, December, January, February, March, the lawsuit is 6 months old and they just found out about it. And it says here, it's unclear why Las Cruces police didn't notify Mark D'Antonio about the lawsuit. It's incredible. And it is going to lead to, I think, obviously, it's going to lead to back to some of the complaints that have been made at the DA's office. But here's a little clip.
Investigation into a high-profile murder in Las Cruces is now suing the city.
KFOX 14 News at 5, Samantha Lewis is live with a look at the impact this could have on the case and the reason the district attorney was outraged when he saw the news.
Detective Irma Palos of the Las Cruces Police Department says she was blackballed by her supervisor and fellow officers. Now the district attorney is livid, saying he didn't know about the lawsuit, which could affect the upcoming Ty Chan trial right here in Las Cruces.
I was not notified by any law enforcement official or anybody in state or county government that there was a pending lawsuit that had some allegations referring to the case we just spoke of. I became aware of it for the first time when I read the newspaper this morning.
District Attorney Mark D'Antonio was furious when he learned about the lawsuit filed by LCPD Detective Irma Palos. She was the lead investigator in the Ty Chan murder case. Chan is a former Santa Fe County Sheriff's deputy. He's accused of killing his partner at a hotel in Las Cruces. In her lawsuit, Palos claims her boss has interfered with her job, including the Chan investigation, by not providing her with a forensics investigator.
You that this is one of the most important cases in our jurisdiction when you have a police officer accused of murdering another police officer.
Is it important to notify the DA's office when you're dealing with such a big trial?
It's important to notify the DA, if you're in law enforcement, of any matter that's pertinent to the case. It's vitally important. And to fail to do so, I've never experienced it in my 25 years of law enforcement.
Palos says the mistreatment started after she testified against a fellow detective in a sexual assault trial. In one instance, she claims a crime scene technician interfered with her investigation into an officer-involved shooting. According to court records, the technician held a finger across her lips to signal to other officers to keep quiet.
So I'm going to establish my own individual inquiry by my office to determine what the facts are and see what steps to be taken in the future, if any.
D'Antonio wouldn't say if he believed the lawsuit would affect the Ty Chan case. The first trial ended in a mistrial, and the second trial is supposed to begin in May.
I reached out to the Las Cruces Police Department for a comment on the Chan investigation and the pending lawsuit. However, spokesperson for the Las Cruces Police Department says he could not comment on the ongoing investigation. Reporting live from our exclusive Las Cruces Bureau, Samantha Lewis, KFOX 14 News at 5.
All right, this is, well, you know, listening to this stuff and reading it, what comes to mind is, number one, I wouldn't assume that Palos is not telling the truth here. I mean, she's put a lawsuit together. It's very specific. You know, it's not like I was sexually harassed at work, I need money. She's specifically stating that she found out about unacceptable sexual activity at the department and reported it. And instead of being, you know, thanked, that she was then put under abuse. And part of the abuse was, as retribution, was against the whistleblower. Part of the abuse is that she wasn't given a forensic assistant. Now, here's one of the things that happened in the trial is they held up a bloody sheet, and it had never been, according to these stories, had never been verified through DNA. So, I mean, you can't use that piece of evidence. There's a statement in here from the family of Martin, the victim, who says this doesn't change anything in the case. We still have the facts, you know, but I'm sorry. It does change things because if you have a retrial, it's affected by what happened in the first trial. And so there's evidence. Okay, let's just say worst case scenario that Irma Palos is right. There is evidence out there that was never gathered for this trial, which could have a massive impact and undoubtedly will have a massive impact. And wasn't gathered. If what she's saying is correct, it wasn't gathered because she wasn't given the assistant. Now that sounds ridiculous. And then you start to think, well, is it possible that the police department was sabotaging its own investigation to help a cop get off? I mean, I have no idea, but another thing that comes, you know, what Palos says could be totally false, right? But what makes you think that it's not totally false is the cops didn't tell D'Antoni, or they didn't tell the DA's office, which is in and of itself a total disaster. It's absolutely ridiculous. And this directly impacts on the case. And it leads me to believe that there is a tremendous problem of communication between the DA's office and the police. And there's some bad feelings. I mean, are you kidding me? But how does the DA's office not know when this case is out there for 6 months, when there had to be a request for, I mean, think about it. In any case, you're going to do a request for documents and discovery and everything. Didn't the DA's office find out at some point through a request for documentation for this case? I mean, how do they say they didn't know about it? That, like, as if the only way they could find out if somebody walked up and said somebody filed a case, you know, a case again on the, you know, related to this, there would have to have been communication in theory to give a foundation for the case in terms of discovery, which is evidence. And also, I find it strange. It makes me feel like the DA's office is disconnected from the court and it's disconnected from the police, which is not a good sign. Anyway, take a little break here. 523-1450-805-6180 to text. And call up if you have a different opinion or have some more facts. We'll be right back on KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 748. Little clip here for you from Jim Gaffigan on a hiking.
Spent a couple weeks there. I stayed in this really nice, like, bed and breakfast. The woman that was running it, every morning she would ask me, she was like, are you going to go hiking today? And all I could think was, wow, this lady knows nothing about me.
Hiking not today or ever. I wouldn't hike to escape the Nazis. Like, if I was in that movie Sound of Music and they're like, to avoid the Nazis, head over those mountains, I would have been, mountains? Isn't there a basement I could hide in?
I mean, like a finished basement, yeah. More of like a keg on an NFL season pass, you know what I'm talking about? I've been hiking. The first thing you notice when you go hiking is it's a mistake. Oh, we're not walking anywhere in particular. There's nothing at the end of this trail. There's no bar or restaurant. Not even a vending machine. We're just idiots. There's always that moment when you go hiking when you realize, oh no, now we have to walk back. There's no exit through the gift shop. I want to like hiking. It's like horseback riding. You want to like it, and then you get on a horse, and you're like, that's right, I'm not a 12-year-old girl. Get me off this poor animal. But hiking is huge. It's huge. There's hiking clothing. There's clothing for walking outside. I thought all clothing was for walking outside. And there's whole parts of the country, the entire Pacific Northwest. Everyone's dressed like there could be an impromptu hike at a moment's notice. Well, I'm going for a coffee, but you never know when a hike might break out. So I'll put on some sturdy shoes and a breathable fleece. That joke was brought to you by Patagonia. Usually hike with a friend, right? And pretend you're in a Viagra commercial. How is your erectile dysfunction? There's always that solo hiker that looks like they just got rid of a body. Is that guy with someone? Why is he carrying a garbage bag? Is that Dexter? Why'd you ask me to walk in the woods? But it's not just walking. Hiking involves an unnecessary amount of climbing. You want to climb up here? No, I don't want to climb up there. I'm an adult. I have a driver's license. I don't like climbing. I don't like climbing into an SUV. You know that final step up? I'm always like, is this worth it? We can't drive a normal car. What are we, going on a safari? Better see a damn elephant if I'm climbing into your gas guzzler. But once you get in an SUV, you're always like, oh, yeah. Let's invade Iraq. Out of our way.
Okay, so anyway, kind of some funny stuff from Jim Gaffigan. Looking for what else I didn't cover. I didn't cover most of this fight over because of the computer with this lady who was insulted by Spicer. We've got another volcano that is leaping to life here in Russia. It has not erupted for 250,000 years is the claim, which I find somewhat suspect. How would they know? But anyway, it's called, got this article here from the Weather Channel, dormant Russian volcano awakens with a vengeance after 250 years. I guess they wouldn't know about that. Volcano at Kambalny. It is located on Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula. And the scientists are very surprised. They said, we never expected this puppy to come back to life. It's a pure surprise for us. We continue the monitoring and analyzing it. The plume of ash went up 16,400 feet into the air. And that area has a concentration one of the greatest concentrations of volcanoes in the world. So if that volcano is coming to life, then you kind of wonder about the other. And we had talked the other day about the possibility of the Ring of Fire springing back to life. So that would be interesting. And it appears to be happening or on the verge of happening. So what do you think about that lawsuit that lady put out there? What does it mean to you? We'll have to, we can talk about it tomorrow, but it is explosive Somebody texted, how many have we set a record for the number of lawsuits that have been filed against the city? Are we in the Guinness Book of World Records for most lawsuits against the city and the police? There have been a lot of them. Here's another text. Why should any one of us living in a sanctuary city pay our taxes, obey traffic signals, avoid running over pedestrians while we're out doing our errands, wear our seatbelts, and go on with fill-in-the-blank disobedience and premeditated crime? Governments aren't obeying the law in these sanctuary cities. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. I really don't think the kitty freezes because he thinks you don't see him. I think he just knows he doesn't want to draw attention, or maybe you've spoken to a cat. I have spoken to a cat, but I can't go into it right now. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Great to spend some time with you, and I hope you have a good day. We'll meet you back in 22 hours, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450 on KOBE. Ciao. 7:59 on the button. I'm going to go to the hospital.